Uber is expanding around the globe. The on-demand car service, which went from offering services in 60 cities at the end of last year, is now in more than 200 cities. But many workers say their independent contractor status fails to provide labor protections or job security. The California Labor Commission recently ruled that one of Uber's drivers qualifies as an employee rather than a contractor. Uber has filed an appeal. So if you work for a company like Uber, TaskRabbit, or Instacart, what do you think of your independent contractor status? How should independent contractors be treated in this new economy? Join us after the news. Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last week, 3,000 taxi drivers in France blocked roads, burned tires, and attacked drivers suspected of working for Uber, which the taxi drivers accuse of ruining their livelihoods. Taxi drivers carry "Death to Uber" signs. They argue the company's business practices are unlawful and undermine the taxi industry. 10 people were arrested, 7 police officers were injured, and 70 vehicles were damaged in clashes between Uber drivers and taxi drivers. This is according to reports. In France, the Uber Pop service is illegal. Uber Pop allows clients to get rides from unlicensed drivers who charge low rates. Government officials have asked Uber to halt the illegal service, but the company has ignored the request. Uber France and two of its bosses will now go on trial in September over the practice. Here in the United States, Uber and other companies that rely on independent contractors are facing mounting legal challenges. The California Labor Commission recently ruled that one of Uber's drivers qualifies as an employee rather than an independent contractor. Uber drivers are treated as contractors. So on today's Your Call, we will explore the rise of the independent contractor economy. How should the laws surrounding these services develop? What do we need to know about the companies relying on independent contractors? And how should these workers be treated? Today, we are joined by Stephen Hill, a veteran journalist and author of 5 books, including the forthcoming Raw Deal: How the Uber Economy and Naked Capitalism Are Screwing American Workers. Stephen has written for several publications, including the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Financial Times, and he's a senior fellow with the New America Foundation, and he joins me in studio. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Rose. It's my pleasure to be here this morning.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Chiara Farinato. She's an economist who specializes in the economics of the internet and innovation. She's an assistant professor at the Harvard Business School. She earned her doctorate from Stanford, where she researched the market design of peer-to-peer internet markets, including Airbnb and TaskRabbit. And Chiara also joins me in studio. Hi, thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much, Rose, for having me.
It's great to have you. So why don't we first start off by talking about what we mean when we say the Uber economy. Stephen, how do you describe that?
Well, first, there's Uber, the company, which basically what they have done is created an app that allows any driver, any person with a car, to go out and be a taxi cab driver. They can use that app, and the app can connect them to someone that wants to get a taxi, to get a ride. And they get paid a certain amount by Uber. Uber sets themselves up as the in-between factor that is connecting the driver with the person that needs a lift. And so there's that aspect. And that's sometimes what we call the sharing economy or new economy, peer-to-peer economy. It also includes companies like TaskRabbit, Airbnb, and others. But beyond that, at least my perspective and what I'm putting into my book about the Uber economy, is it's about what's happening to jobs in the United States. Mm-hmm. Because all of these people, workers who are working for these companies, are what's called independent contractors, freelancers. Legally, they're called 1099 workers. They don't fill out a W-2 form like regular employees do. They fill out a whole other form for 1099 wage. And so these companies, by hiring these sorts of workers, get out of paying about 30% in labor costs because they don't have to pay for unemployment compensation, injured worker compensation, health care, any type of retirement. They don't have to give paid sick days or any kind of vacation. They don't have to even pay for Social Security or Medicare for these workers. So the reality is we're making it easier and easier to hire these 1099 workers, these independent contractors, companies have an incentive. If you're the boss of a company, you think, well, all my competitors are going to these sorts of workers. If I don't do it, then I'm going to be at a competitive disadvantage. It's what I call the steroids of our economy. Everybody starts doing it because if you don't do it, you're at a competitive disadvantage. So these are the real challenges that we're facing in trying to cope with this new economy, the sharing economy, as it's called.
Do you think it should be called the sharing economy?
Well, it was used that way a number of years ago before Uber and Airbnb became as huge as they are, but clearly these are not sharing companies. These are profit-making capitalist companies that basically have figured out a huge loophole in our laws in order to maximize their service and their profits.
We did a show yesterday about the tech explosion and what will happen if we have a bust, I should say. And Uber is valued at $40 billion today.
That's right. And it looks like they're lining up another round of funding that they'll value them at $50 billion, which makes them as big in terms of market valuation as General Motors, the largest auto manufacturer in the United States, even though they don't own any cars. They don't really even employ any drivers. At least that's what they say. They don't employ any drivers. So that's the remarkable thing, is that it's so ethereal. There's really no there, and yet they're attracting these eye-popping market valuations. Airbnb is valued at close to $20 billion, which is bigger than any of the Hyatt chains or any of the big hotel chains, even though they don't own any hotels. And
an interesting article came out yesterday that Uber recorded $470 million in operating losses and $415 million in revenue. Have you seen that? It just came out yesterday.
Yeah, I saw it. I mean, you have to realize these numbers are coming from the companies themselves, and the numbers are very suspect. They are releasing the information they want you to know. I sometimes say you can trust Uber or Airbnb's numbers about as much as you can trust China's or Greece's.
So we know from the freelance union that 68 million Americans, or I'm sorry, 53 million Americans now call themselves freelancers. Do we know how many people work for these companies as independent contractors? According to reports, Uber has 160,000 drivers.
Right. That's Uber's numbers. But keep in mind that most of those are part-time jobs. So, I mean, Uber likes to present themselves as an Uber job creator. But in fact, the jobs are not only part-time. In fact, even according to Uber's own numbers, most of those drivers will not be driving for them within a year. Most of those drivers drive about 15 hours a week. The drivers, I mean, the thing that's interesting in talking to Uber drivers and Lyft drivers and then looking at the numbers, the drivers that are happiest driving for Uber are the ones that drive it the least. The ones who are actually trying to make a full-time job out of it and really trying to make it work, those are the drivers that you see out there protesting on the picket lines right now, really upset with what's going on, because Uber just is a predatory company. One day they'll announce where instead of paying you taking 20% out of all of the money you make, we're taking 25%. Recently, they said we're going to start taking 30% for new drivers. So, I mean, it's just you have no job protection. You have no say in anything that happens. You just drive a car and you hope and pray that it works out okay.
And Kiata, I'll ask you to respond to that in a minute. But looking at the big picture, how do you see the independent contractor explosion, because so many people are now working for these companies? How is that really affecting the economy and what it means to really work in this economy?
I'd like to take a step back first and maybe generalize the peer-to-peer model to a whole bunch of other services that are being provided and not just Uber. Yes, indeed, sharing economy is a misnomer because we are sharing underused assets or time of workers, but for a fee. So I like to call them peer-to-peer companies, which use technology to facilitate the matching of buyers and sellers. And they do allow, they By intermediating these exchanges, they do allow small, flexible suppliers to possibly compete with larger ones. The small, flexible suppliers are the workers on Uber, are the drivers on Uber, are the owners of extra rooms on Airbnb that they rent out and they list on the platform. In that respect, they facilitate trade in a very personalized and time-varying way of goods and services on demand. And from the perspective of the consumers, this creates a lot of convenience, a lot of often smaller, lower prices. This comes at the possible cost that the workers are much more dependent upon the fluctuations of demand.
And so just to let people know what you can get today. I mean, you can sit in your home all day for a week and have everything taken care of.
Yeah, I
taken
think,
care, to,
yeah,
care of, right?
List.
So you can have people come in and clean your home, laundry done, get a massage, get your packages delivered, get your food, have it cooked, maybe cooked meals come. I mean, there and then there's also a butler service. So if you decide to leave your home, someone will come in your home to get your laundry, send out dirty laundry. So there's basically a service for almost everything you need in your daily life.
They're on Angel List. As of now, there are about 600 companies listed as peer-to-peer platforms, ranging, again, from taking care of your pets to carrying your suitcase across the world so that you don't have to take care of it.
I hadn't heard of that one.
Now, that's, of course, that's if you can afford it. I mean, you've always been able to purchase these sorts of services, so that's really not new. What's new is that they've created an app. They've used technology to connect the buyer of the service with the seller of the service so much more easily than you ever could before. And then the ones who hold that app, they're taking 20, 25, 30% off the top. In some cases, according to some of the TaskRabbits and others, even higher. They're taking a cut out of that and pocketing that money. And the problem with doing that is that, you know, we've made it so easy to hire these sort of 1099 independent contractors that if you're a business, why would you have any regular employees at all? Why not just lay all of them off and then hire back all 1099 workers, independent contractors, because you cut your labor costs immediately by 30% and you have a lot less headache. And in fact, the large pharmaceutical Merck, recently, they had a plant outside of Philadelphia where they were making certain drugs. They sold the plant to another company. The company laid off everybody, 400 employees gone. They hired back all 400 employees as independent contractors and then made the exact same drugs for Merck. So that's the type of thing that this type of technology, these apps, this so-called sharing economy is facilitating. And this is going on in city after city, state after state, all across the country. And it's not going on, by the way, in other countries in Europe and others who are saying, like, hold on a second, this is not healthy for a capitalist economy. Because in a capitalist economy, you need to have enough people that can buy up the products and services that you have created, or else employers have to start laying people off and you can't produce any more products and services. You get into a downward spiral, a depressive cycle.
And it's also important to note that in the past, people with money were able to have these services on a regular basis. And now they're available to wider ranges of people because they often offer, you know, here's a free meal and then the next one's $10. Here's an hour of free cleaning your home and the next hour is $20. So they are offering these incentives to people.
Sure. I mean, they're right now these startups have billions and billions of dollars in venture capital. And so they're offering lots of things for free to get you to try their service and even try to hook you in. I mean, that's why in Europe where they're cracking down on Uber big time, and Uber is telling their drivers, just keep driving anyway. Even if they confiscate your car, we'll pay for your car, we'll pay for your fines. And that's what they're doing.
So, Kiata, what is your response to Stephen's major opposition to all of this, that it's creating jobs for people, but they have no benefits, there's no labor protections, there's really no job protection?
So on one side, it is true that the employment relationship is much more flexible. This comes at a cost that the intermediary or the platform actually has less control over their workers. I can, as an Uber driver, decide to log on the app whenever I want and to log off the app whenever I want. I can decide to be a driver on Uber as well as on Lyft. As much as there is flexibility on the side of the workers, there's also some loss of control on the side of the platform, of the intermediary. And related to the types of services and the fact that they are mostly accessible to people with money, the fact that these services are actually getting more and more fragmented. So now I don't need to buy a full day of cleaning or a babysitter for the entire week. I can buy them piecemeal for an hour, for 2 hours, makes them actually maybe more affordable for people who just want them for a short amount of time. That makes access to these service providers a little bit more democratic, in my opinion.
That is Chiara Ferranato. She's an economist who specializes in the economics of the internet and innovation. She's an assistant professor at Harvard Business School. She earned her doctorate at Stanford, where she studied TaskRabbit and Airbnb. And Stephen Hill is a veteran journalist and author of 5 books, including the forthcoming Raw Deal, How the Uber Economy and Naked Capitalism Are Screwing American Workers. What do you think of that title? Stephen just says it there. I mean, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think that Uber and TaskRabbit and these other companies are screwing American workers? Or do you think that they're giving workers flexibility, time to decide when they want to work, when they don't want to work? If you've worked for one of these companies, what's your experience been like? We'd love to hear from you. If you, well, work as an independent contractor, what has your experience been like? If you've used these services, what are your thoughts on how the workers are treated? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. What do you think of the California Labor Commission's recent ruling that one of Uber's drivers qualifies as an employee rather than an independent contractor? Uber is challenging this ruling, so we're not really sure how it's going to play out, but you can bet that all of these companies are watching this very, very closely. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Kiata, based on the research you've done, overall, do you think that this independent contractor economy is a good thing for workers? And if so, why?
I studied these companies from actually the overall welfare that they created. I haven't really focused on the labor conditions on peer-to-peer market places like Uber, TaskRabbit, or Airbnb, because that would require being able to compare their work situation with their next best alternative. So what would they do in the absence of these marketplaces? At the moment, the majority of the service providers on these platforms are actually doing this on an occasional basis. As Stephen said, most Uber drivers work less than a full time over the course of the week. They don't fill their work schedule with the provision of services on one peer-to-peer platform. But what my research has shown is that having this very flexible supply, that is a set of service providers that are ready to accommodate fluctuating demand, is very beneficial for consumers. From the point of view of the workers, the piece of academic evidence that is out there comes from work by Jonathan Ohl and Alan Kruger, looking at at Uber drivers, and they find, based on survey evidence of Uber drivers and data from the company, that Uber may serve as a bridge for many workers seeking other employment opportunities, and it can also be a way to smooth fluctuations in their income. And overall, Uber drivers are attractive to the Uber platform for the flexibility that it offers.
Stephen?
Well, first of all, I mean, I think these technologies have potential. There's no question about that. If you put the right regulations around them, I think you can do marvelous things with these apps and websites and things that can connect sellers and of services and goods to buyers. In fact, in Finland, an example of how to do this right, Finland took the what is basically the Uber app, and they've put it they're using it for public transportation, where you can go on your app and call for a public minibus, and the bus picks up people. It clumps them based on where they're all located, and each route is then fine tuned to bring people to where they need to go. So if you're not doing it with this huge for-profit incentive like Uber's doing, where they're basically having the incentive to, in fact, screw their workers, you can actually do pretty amazing things. And I think eventually over time, once we get the regulatory regime down, we will do interesting things with these technologies. Same with Airbnb and TaskRabbit. But in fact, I mean, I would take issue with some of the things that Kiara is saying, is the idea that that they actually are losing control of their workers. In fact, worker after worker will tell you, whether it's TaskRabbit, Uber, or any of these, that if you get a rating that's below, you know, a certain amount, and it's not a very low rating at all, 4.7, 4.6 out of 5, Uber will shut you off of their app. And Uber actually requires you to do things like provide your own water, provide certain perks for your passengers that they don't get reimbursed for at all. They don't allow you to have tips. They consistently chop the amount, the percentage that you get to keep as a driver. That's why you see drivers going from Uber to Lyft and back again, because to taxi companies. I mean, there's many of them now are going back to taxi companies after trying it, because they found that it really is a pretty predatory company in many ways.
Well, we have an Uber driver on the line, so let's go to Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hi, this is Mike. This is a very interesting discussion, and I appreciate it, but there are some errors in this discussion. I've been an Uber driver since September of 2013. I have done about 7,000 Uber rides, so I have some experience at this. And yes, it's true that Uber paid more money to its drivers when it was first started as an incentive to get going, but they have, as they've increased their commission, they have also increased their business. There's way more business than there was before. And I have not noticed a significant depreciation in my earnings. The other thing about it is that in the taxi industry, you can call any cab company in just about any city in the United States, and you will find that their drivers are independent contractors. If they don't own their own cab, which most cab drivers don't, they are independent contractors. And so this is not something that's new in this industry. The other thing is that you'll find it throughout the industry of drivers in any case. Many truck drivers are independent contractors, and people who move RVs around are independent contractors. A lot of people who drive boats are independent contractors. This is not something that's unusual. And the reason why you have that is just because this is the way the economy works in these businesses.
And so what's your overall experience? You're happy as an Uber driver, it sounds like.
Well, I'm happy as an Uber driver for a couple of different reasons. One, I am retired. I'm 64 years old. And I have a certain medical condition which occurs that occasionally I have time off of work. And there are very few jobs that I could get at my age, very few places that would hire me who would give me time off. And with Uber and Lyft and other independent contractors, you make your own schedule.
I mean, this is the reality of this economy that we're working in, right? It's hard to find a job. People who are older have a heck of a time getting a job.
But that shouldn't change the fact. I mean, even though this gentleman is driving for Uber, and first of all, I'll say if you go to websites like uberpeople.net, you'll see all sorts of Uber drivers that have a very different take on their experience.
Well, right, of course.
So you're going to have a mixed viewpoints out there. But if this driver is driving for Uber, why shouldn't this person still have injured workers' compensation? Why shouldn't they have unemployment compensation? Why shouldn't they have disability, Social Security, Medicare?
And, Stephen, I have to go to break. I'm sure he would love that. But this is the new economy that we're working
in. Other places of the world, that's not how the
It's not that you're that I'm defending it. Just saying that this is what I mean. What the guy said, I can't find a job because I'm older, and this is the job that I'm having. But let's continue this right after a break. We're talking about the Uber economy. We'll be back after this.
Lots of ways to join in today's Your Call. On the phone, 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. Or you can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or simply post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, World Have Your Say from the BBC. And it's Ira Glass and This American Life today at noon here on KALW.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about coverage of women's sports. More people are watching women's sports than ever, so why won't the media cover it? ESPN Sports Center, with more than 100 million viewers each month, devoted a scant 2% of airtime to women's sports, and that number has not budged in 15 years. So why is this happening? And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about the Uber economy, companies that are employing independent contractors to do the majority of their work and to provide their services. In the United States, Uber and other companies that rely on independent contractors are facing legal challenges. The California Labor Commission recently ruled that one of Uber's drivers qualifies as an employee rather than an independent contractor. So what are your thoughts on that ruling? If you work for one of these companies, what's your experience been like? If you use these services, what has your experience been like? Do you think that these companies should have to provide basic services, like benefits, for example? At this point, they don't have job security. They don't have labor protection. So what are your thoughts on that? Today, we're joined by Stephen Hill, a veteran journalist and author of the forthcoming book, Raw Deal: How the Uber Economy and Naked Capitalism Are Screwing American Workers. We're also joined by Chiara Farinato. She's an economist who specializes in the economics of the internet. She is an assistant professor at Harvard. She earned her doctorate from Stanford, where she researched markets, including Airbnb and TaskRabbit. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And thank you for calling, Mike. You know, I think, Stephen, what we were talking about during the break is, I mean, with the TPP, so many more jobs are going to be offshored, right? A lot of older people are having a heck of a time getting a job. People aren't saying that's right, but in this reality that we're given in this workplace, Mike is basically saying, I got this gig, I need some money, and I'm making some money.
Sure, it makes complete sense. But there's things that we can do about this. I mean, basically, we have to start looking at the regulatory regime, the laws that we have. And there's a way to update the social contract and the safety net for this new economy. And it's really actually be fairly simple to do. You know, in the United States, the way it works, and not so true in Europe and Australia and Canada and other places, if you're a part-time worker or you're a temp worker or a freelancer or a contractor, you can be shut out of all of the safety net supports that employers typically give to regular W-2 employees. Well, all we have to do is change that law and simply make legal parity between all these different classification of workers, so that if you're an Uber driver, Uber still is responsible for I mean, there have been numerous examples of Uber drivers who get attacked by their passengers. And you know what? They don't have any injured workers' compensation. They are on their own, and the company does nothing to help them. I can tell you that. There have been incidents of, you know, Uber drivers who have attacked passengers. Or even in San Francisco, a six-year-old girl was killed by an Uber driver on New Year's Day a couple of years ago. And so there's lots of insurance issues around this that Uber simply washes its hands from and says, look, we're just a technology company. We're not a taxi company. And so we have no responsibility here. So I think that these are the laws that we have to look at changing. I don't expect Uber to act differently. They're going by their interpretation of laws. I don't expect Uber drivers who are benefiting from it and like the flexibility to not do it because of all these other things. It's up to the politicians to step forward and create the regulatory regime that we need here.
Chiara?
I think Uber has all the incentives to avoid all these market failures, because if their drivers are unsafe, consumers won't use them. So there is the option of having early regulation imposed by government institutions. There is also the option of wait and see and update, as you said, the regulatory regime to adapt to the new platforms, to the new business models that are being created. Or there is also the possibility, and that's something that the platforms have started doing, that platforms themselves self-regulate by having, for example, as you mentioned, the fact that low-quality drivers are kicked out of the platform.
Yeah, but that's actually, I mean, for example, let's talk about background checks, which we haven't even talked about with Uber. Uber insists that they have the safest background checks in the industry. And it's in fact, it's not true. There are higher standards, and taxi companies are subject to them. And in fact, the district attorney of San Francisco, George Gascon, and the district attorney of Los Angeles are suing Uber because their background checks are inadequate, even though Uber charges $1 per ride for those background checks. In fact, the type of background check that Uber uses, the FBI says has a 43% error rate. That's the standard that Uber is using, that you say, Chiara, are producing safe drivers. And I mean, it doesn't mean that things don't happen with taxi drivers, too. But the fact is that Uber is not using the safest standards. They refuse to do it, even though they easily could. I mean, they could do what taxi cab companies do, but they refuse to do it. So this is just another example where Uber is trying to basically be a road company. They go into lots of cities, and the cities say, okay, we'd like to have your service. Birmingham, Alabama was a classic example. Uber went in there and trying to set up operation, and the city council, it was actually favorably disposed. But they said, you know, we'd like to put just a few regulations around you, having to do with insurance, having to do with background checks, just a few. Uber said absolutely not. They had none of it. And instead, they started attacking the one city councilwoman who was the head of the committee and basically saying she was in the pocket of the taxi cab companies, even though she had used Uber herself in Washington, D.C. and said, you know, I kind of like this service. I'd like to see it come to Birmingham. So this is Uber. This is Travis Kalanick, the CEO of Uber, who has just, you know, pedal to the metal type of attitude about all this.
Why is Uber getting a lot more attention than Lyft?
Because they have more money.
And they're in more cities.
And they're bigger, and they're more cities.
Well, we've got a few more Uber drivers on the line. Let's go to Sam in San Francisco. Hi, Sam.
Yes. Hi, Rose. Thank you. I would like to introduce another element to the conversation. I've been using the Uber platform for a couple of years, and it's very, very tough to make a living. Sure, you can work when you want. And what that means for me is 7 days a week, night and day, in order to try to make a living. That last caller, maybe he's a driver, maybe not, sounded like the company line to me. I want to, if I may, just introduce one thing. I find it very frustrating that the attitude of my passengers, and it's a broad range of people, so many of them, most of them, perfectly nice people. They get in, I feel like I'm just part of the equipment. Hmm. The route is given on the phone. They assume that I will just follow the directions. And I want to say that the fact that people are told not to tip is insult to injury. People tip in all kinds of service situations. No matter how well a driver drives, somehow people have been led to believe that that's all taken care of. Well, it's not taken care of, and I don't know why it's okay for them to think, well, if I give you a rating, and as has been said, if you don't keep up a very close to 5 rating, you're done.
And Sam, I've never used Uber. Does it tell you on the app that you're not supposed to tip?
Tells you on the app that tipping is not, no need to tip, I believe, are the exact words.
Because with the Flywheel app, which is the app that you can use to call a taxi, in the app it says, do you want to tip 15, 18, or 20%? And you choose it before you take the ride. But they don't have that with Uber?
There is no opportunity at all.
Huh.
Even if people want to do it, they cannot do it on the app, and it's virtually forbidden.
And Uber has refused to put it on there.
Why is that? What's the logic behind that? I'm curious.
What's the logic behind surge pricing? What's the logic behind many things that Travis Kalanick does? No one seems to know, but he's forging ahead anyway.
Kiara, what are your thoughts on that?
I actually come from a country where tipping is not a norm. Italy. So I don't have a particular opinion in favor of tipping that can just be transferred to higher wages.
Sam, are you still with us?
Yes.
And so talk about why are you still working for Uber?
Well, why does anyone do anything? A little bit of it is just it's what I'm doing, and it's not as good as it was a couple of years ago for me. It's gotten less good. I probably need to figure out something else, but for now it's what I'm doing. I don't have a better answer than that. It's inertia.
What do you think of the California Labor Commission's recent ruling that one Uber driver qualifies as an employee?
I agree with these arguments. I feel people assume they get in the car and they say, how long have you been driving for Uber, as if I drive for Uber. And I don't really. I drive for them. They're the people paying the fare. And Uber is taking their percentage. In what sense I drive for Uber is not clear to me.
Well, thank you for calling in, Sam. Let's go next to Joe in Oakland. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. Been driving for Uber for almost like 2 years and a half. Generally speaking, I do agree. Uber is not taking care of the driver. Uber, they are sitting in the office and they are taking, say, 20, 25, 30% just because of them connecting between me and the passenger. That's unfair. Besides, for the elder man who said he's 60-something and he's doing it, I think he seems to be happy with it because he's a little bit older guy. He's not like the majority of Uber drivers who happen to have 1, 2, 3 kids just starting family or in between. It's not easy for them to keep jumping from job to job. Besides the point about the no tip and the fact that after getting your brand new car, you can be suspended for any reason, just if you have a passenger or some passenger, you have a bad weekend, passenger drunk or whatever, they give you a negative rating. You feel like you are just like what Sam said, you are a piece of the equipment. Just it's paid. We are paying. You drive. That's it. You cannot even, people would get in the car and blow the radio way over the roof. You cannot even open your mouth, because if you open your mouth, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a zero. You're going to get one.
Well, thank you for calling with that story. We've got a couple other emails I just want to read quickly. Mansur says, I drove Uber X for 12 months and endured 6 overt and covert price cuts. By the time I quit, I was making 50% less per ride than when I began. As a driver, you can only perform a max of 4 rides an hour. Uber and Lyft only cover up to 100. I'm sorry, I can't understand the rest of it. It's about period 2 coverage. I don't know what that is. Do we either of you?
It might have to do with the surge pricing where the price goes up astronomically when there's higher demand.
So just to let listeners know, when there was a music festival in Golden Gate Park, for example, Uber was charging $100 to get downtown.
Exactly. That's surge pricing. I mean, they've in Australia, when a mass murder went berserk in a cafe in a downtown area, suddenly the price to get an Uber went up to over $100 because I mean, this is another quirky thing about Uber. You know, you talk about market allocation, these sorts of things, and people will defend it, including Travis Kalanick. But it's just kind of the crazy thing about Uber. And in fact, it's led to perverse incentives because here's what drivers are starting to figure out. And you can see this in the online discussions among drivers. Drivers are thinking like, okay, if we only are ever going to make any money at this when surge pricing is in effect, what if we hold back and don't drive and force the surge? And so you see all this discussion about how drivers basically hold back at home, monitoring their app, monitoring the prices, and then when the surge happens, they all jump in their cars and go down there. So this is the perverse incentives that have been introduced into the market allocation of the pricing that from surge pricing in Uber. Now this is rather complicated stuff for a lot of people, but the big picture is that. You know, Uber is this is a company that's looking for an IPO. They're basically trying to cut as much as they can from what drivers make. They're trying to cut their prices in order to to get as many people using their service. And Travis Kalanick has an incentive to flood the streets with Uber cars. I mean, that's why anybody who's noticed how hard it is to get through downtown and to travel through this city anymore, it's because there's all these Uber and Lyft and other cars out there. Now, here's the other interesting thing about that. Travis Kalanick has tried to say, and proponents of the sharing economy have tried to say, that this is green. This is good for the environment. And yet Travis Kalanick is flooding San Francisco with tons of cars that are belching carbon, belching exhaust. And a lot of these drivers would tell you they sit around there watching their app, just driving around waiting for a fare. So Travis Kalanick, from the consumer's point of view, which Kiara likes to talk about, you are waiting less time for a car. There's no question the taxi cab service has not been good, and that's been Travis Kalanick's ace in the hole time and time again, being able to say, we're way better than taxi service. No question about that. But this is incredibly bad for the environment. It's incredibly bad for the drivers. They do not use adequate background safety checks. They have done things like threaten journalists who have written negative articles against them. Here in the Bay Area, there's a fellow by the name of Peter Sims, who is an entrepreneur and an author. He was in an Uber car, taking Uber in New York City, when he suddenly started getting texts from someone he barely knew saying, hey, I can see that you're driving, taking a car from point A to point B in New York City. He said, how the heck can you do that? Well, Uber was giving a presentation in Chicago and showing how they could track all these people who are using Uber cars on a big screen. Everyone who was at this presentation in Chicago could see all these people, including Peter Sims, being tracked by Uber. They have your data. They can track you. They do track you. They track journalists who are writing negative things about them. And this is the type of company that we are talking about here. You have to keep in mind all these factors when you talk about Uber.
Stephen Hill is a veteran journalist and author of Raw Deal, How the Uber Economy and Naked Capitalism Are Screwing American Workers. Chiara Farinato is an economist who specializes in the economics of the Internet, an assistant professor at Harvard. She earned her doctorate from Stanford, where she researched markets, including Airbnb and TaskRabbit. Now, if you work for some of these other services, the cleaning, the TaskRabbit, there's grocery, Instacart, I think it's called, the grocery service. There's so many.
Postmates, delivery.
Postmates. If you work for any of these other services, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. And if you use these services, and I'm sure a lot of you do, are these issues you think about? The workers, how they should be treated? What do you think of their independent contractor status? Chiara, I'm going to go to calls in a minute. You talked about these companies self-regulating. Do you have any examples of that, of how they change their business models based on maybe pressure from the workers or, say, bad publicity?
Absolutely. The self-regulation comes a little bit from the background checks that Stephen was mentioning, but also from trust and reputation mechanisms that allow people to leave complaints or evaluate their experiences on the platform. And from that perspective, actually, technology has made it so much easier to ex post evaluate a transaction, so that if I am unhappy or very satisfied with a ride on Uber, I can easily, with the tap of my mobile phone, mention it, and that this will be recorded and will be part of the reputation of the driver. If I have a complaint for a taxi driver, the procedure to go through is much harder, and I am disincentivized from actually leaving complaint and leaving ex post feedback. So these trust and reputation mechanisms allow the platform to guarantee a standard of quality of the services.
What about workers complaining, though? Because we have seen Uber drivers have protested, but also, other workers who are working for these companies who are contractors. What about their collective action? And have you seen examples of companies changing because of worker complaints?
Reputation mechanism on Uber is symmetric in the sense that both the customer rate the driver, but also the driver can rate the customer. And so as a customer, you are evaluated as being good or bad. And a particular driver can refuse to give a ride. Not on the basis of the destination, but on the basis of the feedback score. The same occurs on Airbnb. Both guests and hosts evaluate each other. And these actually can seem a little bit invasive to be reviewed as a customer. I wouldn't want to be reviewed by a taxi driver, probably. But in these cases, actually, sellers also need to be trusting of the person they are giving a ride to or of the person they are hosting in their house.
You know, I mean, a lot is made of these reputation mechanisms, as Kiara calls them, the rating systems that are used. And this is not just for Uber and Airbnb. It's throughout the sharing economy. It's used as one of the means, it's said, for the self-regulation. But in fact, when you really look at how it's playing out in the real world, it's not working out as people would have liked. And first of all, most people normally are inclined to give a 4 or a 5. And so you're not really – people just do it as they're getting out of the car. Okay, yeah, that was fine. Here you go. They're not really giving a whole lot of thought to it. But beyond that, as we just heard, some of the couple of your own callers, Rose, the drivers, saying how it's used to abuse drivers. You know, if a driver doesn't act a certain way, or if someone – vomits in their car, and there's been numerous examples of drivers saying that if someone gets in their car and says, "I'm late to the airport, I want you to go really fast to get there," breaking laws along the way. And if you don't do that, then those passengers can give you a poor rating. And suddenly, if you get below a certain amount, 4.6, 0.7 out of 5, which is not that low, Uber shuts you off, Lyft shuts you off. These sharing economy, TaskRabbit has taken rabbits off of their availability because they get below a certain amount. And so it's just really not as simple as some of them make it out. To think that this is the basis for a self-regulatory system, to me, is just absurd.
Well, we have someone who used to work for TaskRabbit on the line. Let's hear from John in San Francisco. Hi, John.
Hi there, Rose. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I did work for TaskRabbit. I did work for TaskRabbit in the very beginning with their original model, and I was successful enough that I became a TaskRabbit elite. I was one of the very, very top. I think I had one score in my entire time that was less than a 5.0, and it was a 4.9. I eventually stopped using TaskRabbit. Their business model was not sustainable. They reorganized their company, and the new model forced us to wear uniforms, so we could no longer bid jobs. We had to work defined hours. We had to take jobs that were assigned to us. And I said, hey, that makes us employees, and that makes me very concerned about my my tax status, and they wouldn't yield on it, and so I'm no longer with them. And, you know, it's unfortunate that that's where I think these things go. They don't wind up being really sharing. You wind up effectively as an employee as these things scale. I'd also like to comment really quickly on this feedback system. It's really coercive. I agree with the journalist. What happens is that unless you provide extra services or freebies, the clients, they in effect threaten you with a low feedback score. So that's how you do it, and you wind up doing a lot of unpaid extra work to get those high scores.
Wow. Well, thank you for calling in with that experience, John. I'm going to take one more caller, and then we'll get responses. Let's go to Ethel in Oakland. Hi, Ethel.
Good morning, Rose. Thank you for this great show. I think that this is several things really occur to me that we are looking at it, the extension of the discussion about the jobless recovery and kind of the impact of robots on unemployment. And you might say, wait a minute, we're talking about people who are working. Mm-hmm. Yes, we are talking about people who are working. But we are talking about people who are working in a new robot-driven economy. And almost everything, your journalists, the economists, everyone is trying to adjust to this situation, the structural unemployment, without really dealing with the fact that we're dealing, living in a stage of late-stage capitalism. This is not the same world. Mm. So everything is turned upside down. You can see it with a Dylan Roof, who was a disgruntled, poor person who believes that people of color are the reason he can't even feed his kids. These are symptoms of the problem. I think it's courageous what the journalist has done, but we have got to get in there and do more than look at how are we going to ameliorate the old social contract. It has been torn up by these corporations. Workers need to take a lead in fleshing out a new contract that deals with distribution based on the fact that so many millions will never be in the paid workforce as we've known it.
Well, Ethel,
that is what I think we need to look at.
Thank you, and I'm glad you brought it back for us toward the end of the show, because Uber's CEO says that if Tesla can make autonomous cars by 2020, he'll buy 500,000 of them. And we were talking before the show about how this loyalty is just no longer there. If we could get driverless cars, we don't need drivers. You know, goodbye and good luck. So what about that, Kiara? I mean, it is a completely different economy now where, you know, it's about profit. And, you know, in the old days, the companies wanted the workers to be able to at least afford the product they were making.
Well, the example of driverless cars actually shifts the role of Uber from just being the intermediary to becoming the supplier.
But what
of
about the
service
and the workers? What happens to them, the drivers?
How many sectors do I see being completely, do I see where workers will be completely substituted away by machine? I'm not sure there's so many of them. Zayusk is, for example, substituting many waiters, but there's still waiting happening.
I don't think that the driverless car thing is going to catch on, but the fact that he would do it does send a message.
It does send a message, but are we going to try then to leave the regulation as it is now to prevent innovation and new business models from catching up that might actually be beneficial in the long run? Or are we waiting and seeing where this goes and then regulate the new business models with possibly a new structure?
So briefly, Stephen, we're almost out of time. The regulations, are you waiting for the California Labor Commission to see where this goes? Is that the only way that you think
we'll see
these changes?
No, I mean, here we'll in San Francisco, changes? The Board of Supervisors could pass a law that makes the distinction between independent contractor and a regular worker wouldn't make any difference anymore, because they could just simply say, if you're Uber and you're hiring independent contractors, you still have to give them the safety net. Just that simple. The other thing I would just say is that Oxford University recently came out with a study that says that 47% of jobs in the United States are subject to being eliminated by automation and robots.
Well, we will have to continue this conversation. Stephen Hill is author of Raw Deal, How the Uber Economy and Naked Capitalism Are Screwing American Workers. Chiara Farinato is an assistant professor at Harvard Business School. Thank you for joining us. More people are watching women's sports than ever, so why won't the sports media cover it? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about coverage of women's sports. ESPN Sports Center, with more than 100 million viewers every month, devoted a scant 2% of airtime to women's sports. That number hasn't budged much in 15 years, even as audiences for events like the Women's World Cup continue to grow. So why is this happening, and why does it matter? It's Your Call with Matt Martin and you.